And welcome to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. Welcome to the show. I've kind of lost my voice recently from, I think, not screaming, but yelling out too much at a recent concert where the Boogie Wonder Band was playing at John Abbott Campus to celebrate 50 years. So bear with me with my voice not in its top form today on Ecolibrium. But we're going to start off the show with some music. And with rising gas prices and inflation, this song is probably more true than ever. So this is the Rheostatics with the tune Bad Time to Be Poor.
Yeah.
And that was Bad Time to Be Poor by the Rheostatics. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. So today on the show, we are featuring an upcoming event in Hudson, Quebec, this coming Friday, to raise money for Nature Hudson. And it's also a film screening. And Nature Hudson is a nonprofit community organization dedicated to protecting the land, water, wildlife, and scenic beauty of Hudson for current and future generations. And they've been working hard to protect places like Sandy Beach, which maybe you've heard of, in Hudson. We have covered the issue before on the show, so maybe you heard that particular story, which was probably a year or two ago. And one of the things that Nature Hudson did to try and protect Sandy Beach was embark on a kind of pretty major biological study of the site. And Sandy Beach is along the Ottawa River near the town village center of Hudson. And there's mature forests. There's a little river that meanders through it. Often I notice a beaver dam when I'm there. Lots of wildlife. And so when they were doing this project, when they were doing a large biological study, there were, I think, two students, from my understanding, working on the project, and they made a little documentary film about their experience. So that's going to be screening this Friday at 7 p.m. at the Hudson Community Center, which is at 394 Main Road in Hudson. And you can go to naturehudson.org to find out more. The admission price is $15. But for anyone under 18, it's free. And to talk about this event and to talk about the work of Nature Hudson, I spoke to the spokesperson for Nature Hudson, which is Hudson resident J.J. Corker. And I sat down with J.J. in his neighborhood in Hudson to talk about Nature Hudson. So here is that interview now. This is Ryan Young for CKUT 90.3 FM. And for Equilibrium today, we are talking to J.J. Corker, who is the spokesperson for Nature Hudson. And Nature Hudson has a great event coming up this Friday in Hudson at the Community Center. And it's a film screening and I guess a fundraiser as well for Nature Hudson and their fight to protect, or their mission to protect, Sandy Beach, which is a beautiful natural area in Hudson. How are you doing today, J.J.?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Ryan.
Nice to be here in Hudson, beautiful Hudson, where there's lots of green space.
Yes, that's right.
That's why you're trying to protect it. So tell me just a little bit about, I guess first of all, how did Nature Hudson form? Because I know that Nature Hudson didn't just form over Sandy Beach.
No. So Nature Hudson formed as the result of three neighbors on Rue Léger, which is in the east end of Hudson, an area called Como, after we found out that there was a development happening across the street. And when we saw the plan for the development, we saw that a lot of the wetland in that forest was going to be destroyed and replaced by houses, that all the trees were being cut down. And it was a very standard development, very small lots of houses, and that prompted us to start looking at the project in general, at municipal bylaws, and trying to figure out, how did it come about that this natural space was going to be turned into housing in the way that it was? And it formed very informally. The three neighbors, one was a PhD soil scientist, one was a lawyer, and the other one was myself, and I was working as a project manager in construction at the time. So we were pretty lucky that we had that diversity of experience that really covered sort of the three main aspects of development and municipal politics. I understood the construction. I could look at the plans and tell the group what was happening. We had a lawyer who could understand municipal bylaws and how the law worked. And then we had our PhD soil scientist who understood how the ecosystem in the forest and the wetland would work. And then we all would learn from each other and made very quick progress in understanding what was going on with that development. And then the lawyer, whose name is Benjamin, was very good at reaching out to other people. And so he contacted other grassroots green groups in St. Lazare, in Pancourt. And then we actually had meetings with our local MP, with our local MPP, and just really gathered information and ended up doing two studies with Terra Humana Solutions for that terrain, and found that indeed the wetland was bigger than the developer said, and there were more species than the developer said there was, and it ended up actually causing the developer to scale back his project by about two-thirds, because he had not done the proper he had not applied for the proper I guess the Article 22 application with the Ministry of the Environment. He said, we're not touching the wetlands, so we don't need that approval. And we informed both the town and the Ministry of the Environment that, no, there's a wetland there and you do need that approval. And so he scaled his project back and he started building houses. And so for us, it was disappointing well, it was a mix, actually. Some of it was disappointing and some of it was good. We did manage to save a small wetland, a vernal pond, which is essentially a wetland is a pond in the spring where amphibians can nest and lay their eggs, and then they'll go move, specifically frogs and toads, and they'll move back into the forest. And so we did save that, and that was about 8 or 9 houses, and that is saved now. I mean, should be in perpetuity. That's considered a wetland by the ministry and by the town. And then phase two of the project should be greatly reduced, because the town has now made moves to protect all of the wetlands in its territory. So there were some pretty big successes actually from that fight, and we learned a lot. And from that, Nature Hudson then formalized into a federally registered nonprofit. The lawyer moved to Quebec City, and our board was then formed by myself, Bryony Lawler, who's the PhD soil scientist, and the newest board member is Adrian Burke, who's an archaeologist at Université de Montréal.
So then this event, there's an event going on Friday. Tell me about this Nature Hudson event.
I'll just backtrack a little bit and then kind of lead up to the event. The next big, I guess, project that Nature Hudson involved itself with was the fight to protect Sandy Beach, which is a much bigger development on a much more, I don't want to say more important site than the original development, but it's bigger, there's more wetlands, it's more diverse, and culturally for the town, because it's just next to the center of town on the Ottawa River, is a very important place for citizens in Hudson today and in the past. And so we wanted to do as soon as we knew that the development of Sandy Beach was kind of coming down the pipe, we immediately hired Terra Humana Solutions to do a full ecological study and delimitation of the wetlands on that site. And the report that they did was absolutely incredible. We can maybe talk about it more in detail later, but one of the things that happened out of that report is that two of the student volunteers that were working with Terra Humana did a documentary film on the history of Sandy Beach, the fight to save Sandy Beach, and talk to the scientists, the two main scientists who did the report for Sandy Beach. And they sent us a documentary a few months ago, and we said, wow, this is a great documentary, incredible, like, just excellent piece of film. How can we get this out? How can we show it? And we thought, well, it's a great opportunity to have an event. We'll show the documentary. And we were talking, well, what else can we do? And he said, well, why don't we have a panel to discuss the documentary, to discuss Sandy Beach, and then also to discuss issues around protecting the environment. And so we have the two filmmakers, Tiffany Devaneau and Dylan Gwilliam, who will introduce the film, will watch the film, and then we have a panel of 6 people, including Tiffany, the filmmaker, Isabelle Anne Bisson, the president of Terra Humana Solutions, Marion McNair, who is the chief, I guess, researcher for the project. She was there for the entire study. And we also have Joan Gottman, who is a former NDP candidate and is working with MAR, the Mouvement Action Régionale d'Environnement. And we have Campbell Stewart, who works for the Legacy Fund for the Environment. And Frida Beauregard, who is a scientist at the McGill Herbarium. I think I got all six people there. And so we're going to have a panel discussion. We're going to discuss really different ways and different methods for protecting the environment, whether it's grassroots or going the political route, whether it's legal or doing studies. And then we'll sort of talk about, discuss a few different topics around that issue. And then we'll have questions from the audience.
So in terms of, you talked about how great that report was. Was there something that comes to mind that you could mention about that report, or some species that they found that they weren't expecting to find? Or
so the report, I think one of the most important things before even getting into the results of the report is to talk about how many volunteers were involved in creating the report. We had, so Nature Hudson had funding from the Legacy Fund for the Environment, from Bird Protection Quebec. We had, Isabel had a wage grant from, and of course I can't remember the grant. We can splice something in there. a wage grant, and then we also fundraised and people in town supported the report. But on top of that, we had 9 scientists come out from various departments at McGill, University de Montréal, people who specialized in insects or vernal pools, to verify the work that Isabel and Marion were doing on the site. And then we also had 6 student volunteers who helped identify and take notes, and 2 of whom, of course, made the documentary film. And during that report, we found 343 different species. We found 29 species at risk, either provincially or federally, and 1 species, Cardamine dentata, that is not on any list in Quebec because it's not supposed to exist here. I think it's been found 1 other place in Quebec. There's been 1 sighting, and I think in Ontario, 1 in New York. So everyone was pretty excited about that. It's always fun to find something you're not supposed to find. And they found in every single order, whether it was insects, mammals, birds, plants, they found species at risk. So there were bats, there were trees, plants. We had pictures of river otters. It really, really incredible. There was the fraternal potter wasp, which is just a really neat insect that makes its a little tiny nest for its young on the flower. We had a photo of that came with the report. So it was a really, really excellent report. And of course, one of the most interesting, and they also found that the wetland was much larger than what the developer had been claiming on his paperwork. And what came about from the report is really how different what the developer was saying about the territory, about the area, and what our report said about the area, and got everyone interested. The town of Hudson was very interested, the Ministry of the Environment was interested, the Ministry of Faune et Flore et Parc was very interested, and it was just really incredible, and helped to change the narrative in town that, oh, the development's not going to do any damage to any of these, to this area, it's not going to affect anything, to, well, wait a second, this area is an incredibly important ecological area for the town, and the benefits that has on the benefits of biodiversity has, the benefit it has on flood mitigation and so on. And then kind of got a lot of citizens realizing how much they loved Sandy Beach and going there, and some of the reasons why. Now, you know, it may not be the fraternal potter wasp that's going to make people realize they love Sandy Beach, but I think, you know, the study did have a big, big effect at changing people, the citizens' mindset in Hudson. And of course, it's always, I think, good when you have the scientific proof behind what everyone already knows, that it's this amazing place to go and spend time and visit.
You were saying how you were a project manager on some construction mm-hmm. projects and so on. Do you think that these kinds of things where citizens get involved and, you know, obviously make a difference, do you think normally developers get away with, or towns get away with, you know, not doing their homework and doing developments that that actually compromise the natural heritage or the the ecological heritage of Canada or Quebec or this part of Quebec?
I mean, the short answer is yes, definitely. History, if you look at the amount of wetlands that have been backfilled and disturbed in Quebec, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's quite high. We don't have, from even 100 years ago, we don't have a lot of wetland left, as an example. I know I can speak for Hudson specifically, and I'm sure it's quite similar for many municipalities in Quebec and in Canada. The mechanism at the moment is really for the town to consider the development after they've considered what's there. Now, Nature Hudson has been pushing the politicians and trying to educate citizens to the idea that you should really do a proper ecological characterization of the site, and from there you proceed with how can we develop the site if we even want to develop it? Whereas right now, most of the developers come, there's basically a blank sheet of paper with a cadastral number on it, and they pop their roads and their houses on it and some trees they're going to plant. They might keep a few trees here and there that they think are big enough worth keeping that don't affect the rest of the development. And the town says, oh, okay, well, we approve that in principle. And then the process gets going, and it's really too late at that point. I mean, legally, it's not necessarily too late. There are mechanisms, and developments have been stopped at the very last second by injunctions and other ways. But it does make it difficult for the municipality to backtrack once they've accepted that. And so, one of the things we'd really like to see is proper site characterization, and then how can we make, if we do want to develop this area, how can we develop it in such a way that we're going to maintain the ecological heritage, maintain the ecological beauty, the functions of that area, while still bringing in some houses and if that's what the town wants. For Sandy Beach, I don't think there's really any room for houses on that territory. There's a few spots, like at the very edge, you could maybe put a few buildings, but generally speaking, and the recommendations of the report show this, that in order to maintain that ecological diversity that was found there, that is so amazing, you really need to leave the entire thing intact. I mean, you have a serpentine river that goes through it, up to the Ottawa River. There's a big floodplain every spring that floods. There's different kinds of forests. There's three or four vernal ponds. And as soon as you start breaking that up, you're going to have a really big effect on the ecosystem that's there. So there are ways to develop, I think, unfortunately, to develop and maintain the ecological heritage, maintain the tree canopy. Right now, those mechanisms are not really there. And I mean, frankly, it's less expensive for the developer to do it the way that it's been done before. You cut the trees down, put the roads in, do the infrastructure, and build the houses.
And was there something about this particular case where you could look at it and remark to yourself, oh, well, if we hadn't done this or if people didn't get involved, it would have been a different outcome?
I mean,
Do you know what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to, get you maybe to talk a little bit about how, in retrospect, you looking back, and of course, it's still an ongoing issue, but that it changed the dynamic, and there was an election, right?
yes, so at the moment, Sandy Beach is not saved yet. There still are, I believe, two court cases that the developer is involved in, one with the Ministry of the Environment and one with the town, because they continue to push for development. Unfortunately for them, there's a number of things that happened in the last 5 years. One, in 2017, the Ministry of the Environment updated their law, so la protection de l'environnement, and they made it much, much, much stricter. They actually added protection for the environment. In 2017 in Hudson, there was a very large flood. Sandy Beach was a huge flood in Sandy Beach, and there were towns in Hudson that were ruined. Roads were flooded. In 2019, we had another flood, and those two floods educated the public, I think, around the importance of wetlands and the importance of flood mitigation more than any grassroots group could do. And then we had an election in, so I, well, then Nature Hudson formed in 2020. a group called the Sandy Beach Protection Group, which worked very closely with Nature Hudson, joined, and we had two marches. We had hundreds of people both times. We marched to protect Sandy Beach. Lots of citizens got involved. And then some of the people that were involved in that Sandy Beach Protection Group ran to become local councillors and won. And in fact, there were four, I would say, of the six councillors that ran that year, won on environmental platforms. So it completely changed the political makeup of council and mayor. And now, one of the first things they did was put in a temporary control measure to put a halt on any new development in a natural area. And then we formed a conservation working group. There were a few members of Nature Hudson that were on that group. There was a PhD forester, a PhD ethnologist, there was an economist. And we looked at the 2020 Eco2Urb study, which looked at the whole town and put five tiers on different areas of town. They were basically five tiers of ecological importance, starting with wetlands and going through the different forests. And we sort of gave the town recommendations. The town went back to a town planner, and they are now, there's a second temporary control measure. I know I'm kind of glossing over a pretty long, complex process, but what I'm trying to, I guess, instill is the idea that the politicians are now doing their job to protect Hudson's natural spaces, and that came about through, you know, grassroots movements, through Nature Hudson, through the Sandy Beach Protection Group, and then through, I would say, some results of climate change that a lot of different places in the world are seeing. And, you know, two floods in 3 years is not normal.
And then, in terms of yourself, when you personally go walk around Sandy Beach, what do you like about it? What jumps out at you as being special about it?
So I grew up from the age of about six on Quarry Point. My parents bought a house there in 1980. And Quarry Point is the sort of rock extension of Sandy Beach that juts out into the Ottawa River. And at the time, when I was a kid, there were little cottages on Sandy Beach, about five or six of them. They weren't used for very long. They were sort of abandoned shortly thereafter. But we used to spend a lot of time walking around the forest of Quarry Point and walking into Sandy Beach. You could actually walk into town from Quarry Point right through Sandy Beach. So you could effectively get to town from the end of Quarry Point walking solely through forest. And I was probably a teenager when I realized when you left downtown Hudson and it was sunny and it would be hot, and then you'd, you know, middle of summer, and you'd walk past the river and into the forest, and right away the smells were different, the light was different, it was much, much cooler, you'd hear more birds. I mean Sandy Beach is an incredible spot because there's this big round, basically two round crescents of sand, huge, huge old white pines, and then where the river runs through, there's wetlands, and it's a more of a mixed hardwood forest. But it was just one of those places, when you enter, you immediately feel like you're entering somewhere special. And later on in life, traveling and going to different places, there's just something about a forest that's healthy. When you enter it, you immediately feel just different and you feel better. It just has this amazing salubrious effect on your mind and your body. And of course, there's been a ton of science that have come out in recent decades about what's happening there. There's different oils and pheromones coming from the trees. The trees are talking to each other. There's all kinds of things. And of course, the temperature is much lower. And I think we notice the temperature is one of the things we notice more as it gets warmer and warmer every summer, and people start looking for those cool spots. But that was one thing that always struck with me, or always struck me about Sandy Beach. And then I've seen some amazing photos of Sandy Beach from the 20s and 30s in Hudson, where the beach was just packed with hundreds of people. It's black and white photos. They're wearing the old kind of what we would consider slightly funny looking bathing suits. There's picnic baskets, and there's guys doing pyramids on the beach on top of each other. And when I was there, there weren't really that many people using the beach. And more recently, especially during COVID, we see again hundreds of people going back to the beach and basically doing the same thing. They're wearing different bathing suits and they have plastic coolers now, but they're really enjoying that area. And, you know, during COVID, it was obviously, it really was stressed how important that area was for people who don't have access to water, as there's less access to water, it's more private. And so now Sandy Beach is, in my mind, are the two things sort of separate, and I'm beginning to understand how connected they are, where you have an ecological importance and a cultural importance, and how those two things, when they come together, are create more than the sum of their parts, and really bring, I think, you know, just add to people's health and to people's well-being, both body and mind. And so, you know, I think I'm not the only one that's realized that in the last, certainly in the last 3, 4, 5 years in Hudson. And I think that some of, you know, the floods and COVID and the marches and Nature Hudson and Sandy Beach Group, and you know, I think citizens really, really kind of grabbed onto that. And I think that's why Sandy Beach is it's certainly positive going forward. I think we can protect it. I think we can all find a way to protect this area.
And when it comes to the provincial Ministry of Environment, it seems to me that, you know, they don't have enough employees. They're not really, they don't have feet on the ground, sort of watching over these things. But it takes citizens to kind of point out stuff to them. And once it's pointed out to them, then they might do something.
That's been my experience. Yes. I've actually, it's funny, we've had meetings, and I mean, mostly with Zoom meetings the last couple of years, but definitely telephone calls and, you know, a lot of email exchanges with the scientists at the Ministry of the Environment. And they have always been on our side. I mean, 100%. They are trying to do their job the best they can. They do not have enough feet on the ground. You know, they go to places where they can. And one of the things I've heard that's very interesting is when a project comes to them, they're often in Quebec City, they might be in the Montérégie, there's different offices throughout Quebec. They get a project and it will be dealt with in the local office. But if the municipality, and sometimes if citizens, but not always, but especially if the municipality, if the government flags a certain project, it will go up the chain to the next level. And of course, citizens can encourage the municipalities and the government to flag that to the ministry. So it really is, you know, those the ministry, the grassroots groups and the government working together to tell the ministry, and then they will send people on the ground. We actually found that in the case of Sandy Beach, we sent them our report, and maybe by coincidence, maybe it's because we sent them the report, the Ministry of the Environment revoked the 2014 Certificate of Authorization for the Article 22 for the Sandy Beach project. It's one of the cases that the developer is taking the ministry to court over, saying you're not allowed, and they've cited one of the clauses that because the certificate was authorized in 2014 before the law change in 2017, that they're not allowed to revoke it for one of the reasons that they stated. They did state two reasons, and that's in the courts. So obviously, I mean, my experience is that yes, the scientists are willing to accept new information and make new decisions, and the ministry is willing to do so as well. There is obviously, there are legal repercussions, but also it seems that the ministry is changing their orientation and they are looking to protect the environment, you know, more. Again, I only have a few examples to cite, with personal experience, but yeah, that's good news. I mean, I really hope, obviously, that they either win their case in court or the developer drops that case, and that the 2014 certificate of authorization remains revoked, which means they would have to go back and redo that whole process under the new laws. Also, having our report, and you know, I don't think you can go backwards from our report. They would need a similar report of their own. And again, you know, I'm not. Whenever you get good scientists on the ground doing a report in that area, you're going to find pretty incredible biodiversity.
At Hudson, I think a lot of people associate Hudson with green spaces, and that it's even for people who live here, it's part of their identity that they live sort of in the country. And do you think that that helped having that? And that some people may be worried that they're losing one of the things that makes it great to live here.
Yes, without a doubt. I think Hudson, or citizens in Hudson, perhaps took for granted the incredible natural heritage that we have here, because we haven't really been affected by yet by the same growth and pressure to build more that some of our neighboring municipalities have, especially Vaudreuil, which is, you know, was the at one point the fastest growing municipality in Canada, I believe. And now Hudson's starting to feel it again. The last 5 years, we're starting to feel that pressure, and so citizens are saying, "Oh, well, okay, that pressure means we're going to lose some of those green spaces, and we don't want to lose those." And yeah, people, I mean, again, people come out to Hudson. It's a bit like that Sandy Beach effect. Like, oh wow, this is kind of amazing. Look at all these mature trees. There are streets in Hudson that still have a canopy over the entire street, and you don't see that very often in the suburbs. We have a project in Hudson looking at remarkable trees, of which we have many of, and people are you know, certainly impressed by some of the incredible oaks and maples that we have. So, you know, getting, I think, reminding citizens that that's why we're all here was what was needed, and people, I think, maybe took it for granted a little bit. One of the first things that the group of citizens on Leger did before Nature Hudson was we did a townwide petition, and we ended up only having enough time really to do, I would say, about half the town in terms of the total volume. We went to different areas, but we had 700 signatures from residents in Hudson that all, I mean, were happy to sign and said, wait a minute, what do you mean we're there's a pressure to lose our green spaces? Like, no, we have to keep the green spaces. That's why I'm here. And we did have many, many people say exactly what you said, Ryan, that yes, I moved to Hudson because of the green spaces, of the natural spaces, of areas like Sandy Beach, of the proximity to the Ottawa River.
The identity of the place is wrapped up in its, you know, abundance of natural spaces, but it also has quite the lively village core, and with a lot of activities going on, a lot of cultural groups. You've got the Hudson Village Theater. You've got a film festival, you've got Story Fest, and there's even a Hudson Food Collective as well.
Yes.
And so can you talk a little bit about, you know, how did that help, that kind of culture, and were there other of these groups that, you know, people were suddenly getting involved in, or?
I don't know if Hudson is, or how unique Hudson is, but I would imagine that there aren't too many other towns that have as many volunteer organizations as there are in Hudson, and cultural organizations. We have the English Theater, which you mentioned. There's a film fest. There's a music fest. But then we also have, there's a, you know, quite a few Meals on Wheels. There's the NOVA, which donates, I think, to 15 different organizations, including the library, which is run by volunteers. We also have the Hudson Food Collective, which runs Heartbeat Farm, which is in the west end of town, which is a organic vegetable farm run pretty much solely by volunteers and employees through the Canada Summer Jobs Program, along with some other grants. And I think one of the reasons that Nature Hudson took off so easily in Hudson is because there's the culture of these grassroots groups. So it wasn't strange to anyone that there was another group doing something specifically for the environment, but that certainly could work closely with some of the other groups, whether it's the Hudson Foods Collective or Le Nichoir, which is an amazing organization that rehabilitates songbirds and water birds. I'm sure I'm forgetting some other organizations, and I apologize for that. But, you know, and we talked to some of those other groups. There's Greenwood Historical Society. They have the oldest house in the MRC, which is very close to where I live in Como. And so one of the things that Nature Hudson did at the beginning was we went and talked to a lot of those different groups, and they were always more than happy to help whenever they could. Why don't you go talk to this person, go talk to that person, or do this, or we've done that, and we found this works, or apply for this grant. So, yeah, it's Hudson is a pretty tight-knit town. There's a lot going on culturally and a lot of different groups on the ground working to make Hudson and the area a better place.
And in terms of where you were living yourself, which has a lot of green space as well, were there experiences you had around here where you were like, wow, there's a lot of nature here, or there's interesting animals, or?
Yes. So in the spring on my property, there are two apple trees, and we've had an oriole that's shown up every spring. I can't say for sure, but I think this morning, eastern bluebird actually landed on top of the umbrella. I think there's some water in the top. It was closed, and the bird was drinking it. I had an eastern phoebe nesting on my back light. One of my favorite, I have a, this is one of my favorite stories of living here. I have two large black walnuts in the corner, and my neighbor has two huge butternuts. And so every spring there's an enormous amount of black walnut and butternuts that fall on the ground. And my shed, which is kind of a work in progress, has lots of openings. And so every year I have a family of red squirrels that lives in there that collects nuts over the winter that I have to go in there in the spring. And I just don't have the heart to clean it out in the winter, but in the spring I'll go in there and I'll pile the nuts up somewhere for him, and he'll put it under, they'll eat it and they'll go in the spring. And of course, every time I go in the shed, he'll be in the corner and he starts yelling at me. And I said, well, I have to do some work in the shed, and he'll go outside, and or she. So that's, I kind of feel like I have, you know, they're not quite pets, but they're certainly friends that live with me on the territory. Something I've never seen in Hudson, but Don McCracken, who's a photographer, has photographed river otters at the confluence of the Vivry River, which runs through Hudson into the Ottawa River. And I have seen many, there's a beaver dam there. I've seen lots of beavers there, but never seen river otters. Lots of bald eagles. The last 5 to 10 years, there's a pair of bald eagles that I don't know if they nest over here or in the pines in Canasatake across the river, but they're definitely lots of sightings, and they're pretty amazing. You see them fishing. They sit up in the, usually in like in an old dead branch of a pine looking at the water. So lots of turtles in the bay, right by the Willow Inn, by Quarry Point. They found a turtle nest in the study we did at Sandy Beach. They found a turtle nest right in the parking lot, sort of showing you that even a parking lot can be a habitat for turtles. And there's someone who's become a friend, Donald Atwood, a retired ethnologist, and he used to write a bird column for your local journal, which unfortunately closed its doors recently. And so he's always giving tips on how to feed birds and bird sightings. And the west end of Hudson has a huge forest. It's an amazing place to look for birds, to go bird watching. And of course, Sandy Beach is a great one because there's those two wetlands and the river. And
that would be west of where Le Nichoir is, right?
Yes, well, Le Nichoir's part is situated on a territory called the Clark Sydenham Reserve, which was donated to the Nature Conservancy Canada, I believe by the Clark family and the Sydenham sisters who lived in the house next door. And that's a there's a trail, a bunch of trails through there, and they have a big field where apparently they've had bobolink sightings recently, and there's forest in there. And so that's an amazing place to go look. And the other forest is old agricultural, old farmland that's grown up, but it's been growing up for a long time. Lots of ravines and rivers in there. It's owned privately, but if you go talk to your neighbors and you're nice, I'm sure you can walk around back there and do some bird watching. Thompson Park, which is used to be a soccer field, and the town recently planted some trees there, and that you have access to the water. And there's a nice line of trees along. I think there's striped maple probably down there. So there's no shortage of, and we do also have an official trail system in Hudson. There's, I think, 5 or 6 trails, one that goes through up by Whitlock Golf Course. There's one in the center of town that goes along the Vivry River corridor. I think if you ask anyone in Hudson, they'll tell you about their favorite tree or trail or last animal sighting that they had. Yeah.
Nice. I think even a moose was seen here not that long ago.
I have never seen a moose. I've heard lots of stories of moose sometimes crossing the river or swimming in the bay. Definitely. I've seen a coyote in the West End on a farm in the middle of the day. And the coyotes, the West End, there's actually coyotes howling almost all the time. I don't hear them so much in the East, in Como. And I think there was even a sighting of a bear not too long ago. Those are rare. I mean, if you read the old settler stories of Hudson going back 100 years or so, they weren't complaining about squirrels in their garden. They were complaining about bears, which is it's a bit of a different thing. You need a bigger fence, I guess. But it's an amazing spot if you like to look for animals.
Nice. That's great. So this event on Friday, what can people expect when they go? And there's an admission price, I guess, right?
So the price is $15. It's a fundraiser. All funds go to Nature Hudson. We actually still owe a little bit of money for the Sandy Beach report. Despite all the volunteers, we still had to pay Terra Humana Solutions and the scientists some money for that report. and we owe a little bit for that. And then we wanted to, we also have some accountant's fees and some legal fees and things like that, that Nature Hudson would like to, hopefully we can fundraise towards. And then also we want to give the filmmakers some money for either promoting this film or for their next project. So it's $15 at the door. Under 18s are free, and any students or people who can't afford the $15, you can just come in by donation. And then we're going to push some of the people that maybe can afford more than $15. If they want to make a donation, they can. And they can do so through the Legacy Fund for the Environment. And they can actually get a tax deduction form from the Legacy Fund, who's a registered charity.
And Nature Hudson has a website?
Yes, we have a website, naturehudson.org. And I believe there is a link to the event flyer, and there's some information right on the homepage about the time, the date. So this Friday, June
10th.
10th, thank you. 7 to 9 p.m. at the community center. That's right on Main Road, right in the center of Hudson. And there is, I believe, and if there's not, we'll make sure to get it up right away, a way to make donations to the Legacy Fund, either by check, by mail, or by email.
Do you know much about the Legacy Fund for the Environment?
Well, the Legacy Fund for the Environment is an organization that we worked with on the first development that we were fighting, and then also on Sandy Beach. They concentrate on helping green environmental movements who want to protect the environment legally, but they can also help do studies and other things that can be used towards legal fights later on. So that's their mandate. They have a great website. Just do your usual internet search for Legacy Fund for the Environment. And Stuart Campbell, who has been very supportive of Nature Hudson and very helpful, is going to be one of our panelists. And so if people want to ask questions about the Legacy Fund or about legal aspects of you know, fighting to protect the environment, that's a great opportunity to do so.
All right. Well, thanks so much for talking to me, and I guess my last question would be, do you see a role for Nature Hudson going forward?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely, even with the sort of political change in council, there's always opportunity for Nature Hudson to continue to promote and protect the natural spaces in Hudson. We've been talking about doing some tree planting projects, which is, I think, one of the next things we'd like to get involved with. And there's always more studies to do. And, you know, definitely the experience that Nature Hudson has gathered over the last couple of years can certainly be put to use by whether it be the town or private landowners, even developers. If you want to work with us, we'd be happy to help you characterize your site before you decide how to develop it.
Nice. Thanks for speaking to me.
You're very welcome, Ryan. Thank you.
And that was my interview with J.J. Corker, who is the spokesperson for Nature Hudson. We spoke just a couple days ago about this upcoming event, which is happening on Friday. You can find out more by going to the Nature Hudson website, and that's naturehudson.org. And for any inquiries, you can email them at jj@naturehudson.org. So you can email them at jj@naturehudson.org. And one of the organizations that is going to be present at the event is the Legacy Fund for the Environment. And they are a great charity which works to fund legal cases often in defense of natural spaces that citizens are trying to protect. And you can find out more about them by going to their website, which is legacyfundenvironmental.org or .org. And Campbell Stewart, who is a lawyer with the law firm Colby Monet and also the former mayor of Montreal West, will be in attendance at the Nature Hudson event this Friday at the Community Center in Hudson. And just to give you the information once again, the Community Center is located at 394 Main Road in Hudson, and it's right near the center of town. And this event is Friday, June 10th, starting at 7 p.m., going till 9 p.m., a film screening and panel discussion, and admission is $15, but for anyone under 18, admission is free. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's great to be with you today, and we're basically running out of time, so we're going to play some music. But before we do, we'll tell you that you can always email us at ecolibrium@ckut.ca. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ecolibrium@ckut.montreal. And you can find out more about us by going to our little website, which is equilibriumradio.weebly.com. And we also have an affiliated podcast on Spotify, which is called the Equilibrium Radio Podcast. So recently, Arcade Fire, famous Montreal band, came out with their newest album. And they have a tune on there called Age of Anxiety 2, in brackets, Rabbit Hole. So that's the tune we're going to leave you with today. This is Age of Anxiety 2, in brackets, Rabbit Hole, by Arcade Fire.
Rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Plastic soul.
Yeah.
Rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Heaven is so cold. I don't wanna go. Father in heaven sleeping. Somebody delete me. Hardy ha ha. Chinese throwing star. Lamborghini contact. Maserati sports car. Rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Plastic soul.
Yeah.
It's a real rabbit hole. Yeah, rabbit hole. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Walk with us on Saturday, June 11th at 1 p.m. Join us for the 8th Annual Spirit Walk on beautiful Mount Royal. The Spirit Walk is an annual fundraiser for the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal, Poyipo Tham. Register to walk and set a personal goal to fundraise for the shelter. All funds go directly to the Native Women's Shelter of Montreal towards their second stage housing project and Saradikitak Social Pediatric Clinic. Join us for fun, community-driven, even including musical performances generously supported by CKUT. Everyone is welcome. Bring your friends, family, and pets, and come walk with us. Follow our Instagram at SpiritWalkMTL for links to register and for more information.
Through Tree Canada's National Greening Program, native tree seedlings are planted across Canada, creating a widespread impact. Planted trees provide habitat, prevent soil erosion, and reforest areas that have suffered tree loss due to pests and weather. Tree Canada performs 1, 2, and 5-year assessments to monitor tree survival and ensure the trees planted are on track to meet the forest cover goals of the site. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
Le Prison Radio Show est une émission radio avec des nouvelles pour les prisonnières et leurs alliés et familles. L'émission cherche à confronter l'invisibilité des prisons et la lutte des prisonnières en se concentrant sur les racines de l'incarcération, de la police et de la criminalisation. Nous sommes dédiés à des programmes qui collaborent directement avec des personnes actuellement incarcérées. Dans cet esprit, nous aimerions...
Feel the beat!
Wait a minute, that's too fast.
Now what?
Kick it over here, baby pop!
CKUT, yo, yo, this is for your mind, soul, and spirit. Plus your positive vibes, masters at work, you gotta hear it. And West Indian rhythms on Saturday night. Roots, rock, reggae, I keep it tight. Manchild, hitting switches, keep it right. Disciple on a Friday, Psalms of soul, I do it my way. With ill groove on Sunday, I gotta say one way. We stick together, it's for unity in the community. On CKUT at 90.3, Manchild and John Fish. We give you that musical wish to put more music in that dish. So listen to your radio station and simply turn it on. CKUT, word is born. Y'all enjoy.